follow-up album from Sydney's Olo. Featuring the single The Campaign for Real Bread, the If is a meticulously crafted release with imaginative vocal pop, dub and acoustic elements. Olo's consistently crafty approach and smart programming creates this year's must-have LP. Catch Olo live, April 6th, Good Friday, at Horse Bazaar, 397 Little Lonsdale Street in the city. Olo, RRR sponsors.
A hearty welcome to Against the Arctic this week. It's April Fool's Day, folks, a pinch and a punch for the first of the month. You're with Declan on 3RRR, big thanks to Jonathan Alley for Under the Sun. The fine musical melee between 6 and 8 p.m. is when you can hear him next week, next Sunday night. And it is indeed an icebreakers edition of Against the Arctic this week. Dave Hager is my regular guest for this segment, and tonight we have a very special guest. What we like to do on this segment is take a look at some local visual art, often located on, but not necessarily limited to the internet. And this week we have Carolyn Fraser from Idlewild Press, a small studio up in the Nicholas Building on Flinders Lane. She'll be joining us to have a talk about her work, The Long Lost Art of Letterpress, and tell us what she's done, is doing, and will do in the future. She does everything from make sort of custom-made artist books through to the humble business card with a beautiful attention to detail. So she'll be in a little bit closer to 8:30. On the music side of things, there is much to get through as well. We're going to hear from Mikey Squire off a pretty cool little 7-inch that Crookneck have put out. We heard the B-side last week from Phil Ransom. We'll hear Mikey's cut tonight. We're going to hear from Lisa Miller, also from Jay Diller, the new Rough Draft record. I've really been giving it a bit of a workout on my stereo, on my headphones. And even though it's old, it still sounds really fantastic. We'll hear some Gainsbourg, some Space Age Bachelor Pad music, and all other sonic delights until 10 o'clock. Arctic style. We're going to start off with a little bit of library music from a kind of kooky record released by Chapel Music Libraries. These records, while often sometimes a little bit daggy, are sort of heavily sought after by collectors for their either for drum breaks or samples or loops. But sometimes they just have really fantastic production values. The musicians that played on these records were often really fine session musicians, and they're very good at pulling beautiful tones. So I thought we'd start with a gentle little number from this Chapel record. Light Atmospheres is the name of the series. So smooth. You're on 3RRR. Thank you.
Parce qu'il avait cette fille dans la peau. Et pour ne pas l'oublier, il se l'était fait tatouer, tatouer. Juste à la place du cœur. Il s'est fait tatouer un cœur. Tout le monde a un cœur. On peut lire à l'intérieur. De même sur les avant-bras. De même où ça ne se voit pas. Encore une fois. C'est-à-dire un peu plus bas. Malheur de malheur maintenant qu'il n'aime plus. Comment faire pour effacer ce qu'il a fait tatouer, tatouer. Faudrait arracher ce cœur. Qui est tatoué sur son cœur. Tout le monde a un cœur.
Arracher ce cœur. Tatoué.
Intérieur. De même pour les avant-bras.
Tatoué, Jérémy.
Surtout où ça ne se voit pas.
Jérémy.
Encore une fois.
Où ça ne se voit pas. Tatoué, Jérémy.
C'est-à-dire un peu plus bas.
Broadcast with a track called Minim from their record going back a year or two ago. Haha Sound. Actually, it's probably a little bit longer than that, I reckon, for that broadcast record. I've released one since called New Buttons. We heard from Bertrand Bergelat before that. Attention Amiante was the name of the song. The Sound of Music, the name of his pretty amazing record on a label that he runs and owns called Tricatel out of France. I did once see him play in a small gondola in the middle of Paris during Music Festival Week, and it was really something special. And he said that I was very lucky because he has not played in Paris for some time. But he's kind of like a modern Gainsbourg, and that record is really a fantastic mixture of kind of acoustic and electronic sounds, all kind of put together, seemingly painstakingly produced. And I'll put a little link on the playlist to the Tricatel website if you're interested in hearing a little bit more about him. Serge Gainsbourg before that, indeed, from 1964 and an album called Percussions. Tatou Jérémy was the song we heard. And we started off with that pretty kooky, highly daggy piece of library music from the Chapel Library series. Light Atmospheres was the record. The Mood series we heard tagging along was that little ditty. It's about 16 minutes past 8. You are on Against the Arctic.
Yes, I knew her name. It was written in the sky. She was wearing what I liked. The color caught my eye. Later on that night, with my mattress in the light, got a ticket and a fright. I brought this on myself tonight. I was afraid to sleep. I knew when I caught her eyes, she'd be dancing on the rooftops, chasing some other guy. Diamonds in her pockets when she jumps, her dress is torn. Here she is beside me, stretched out on the lawn.
Thank you.
Demo recordings from local artist Tim Richmond. Unfortunately, an untitled song, but I will find out the title and post it on the playlist. And you can catch Tim playing down at the Spanish Club on the 25th of April. It's a Thursday night. He'll be playing some of his songs down there from about 9:30. So do check that out. Lisa Miller was before that with a long, kind of rollicking track off her new record, Soon. Or I think it's out. Or this was a promo CD from a couple of weeks ago, so I assume it's very soon out. Through Inertia, Love Will Carry You was the song we heard, and the new record is Morning in the Bowl of Night on the Rowl Records label. May the shop rest in peace. New Buffalo before that, the song from her new record called Somewhere Anywhere. Pretty little song called Versary. You're on 3RRR, you're with Declan until 10 o'clock, and this is Against the Arctic. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking with Carolyn Fraser from Idlewild. Stay tuned, here's something from Arcade Fire, and their new record, Neon Bible. We'll be right back.
dream between the click of the light and the start of the dream. Between the click of the light and the start of the dream. Between the click of the light and the start of the dream.
Thank you. Lay on the bed in the dark. Laughing at things I think of. Getting off on the pornography of my past. Lighting matches and dropping them into a wet glass. It's summer now and it's hot, and the sweat pours out. And the air is the same as my body. I breathe my body inside out. With sunlight around, my skin turns brown, and you wouldn't know me from your pa or Adam or Allah. But I haven't changed. No, I haven't changed. Day is all that resolves. All we need is here on earth. About every other. Scratch marks on my knees since I've been running the Brambley, the Brambley. Oh, 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 the Brambley. Oh, 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 the Brambley. When I'd much rather be wanting to be running the loping. Peace on your hand. Don't be silly. But peace in my body when tired and beaten. All we need is here on earth. About every other day. To live in the country with a chicken and those other things, where the hills sloping, where the dress and the hair in the river undulating. To take a wife and no paper, never again to wonder, did that rapper rape her? All we need is here on earth, about every other day. All we need is here on earth, about every other day.
Gentle meanderings of Mr. Bill Callahan, as he will now be known from now on. But when he wrote that song, he was calling himself Smog, and it's a beautiful one called Running and Loping from a record called A River Ain't Too Much to Love. You might have been lucky enough to catch him playing out here with Joanna Newsom about the end of January, I think, the beginning of February. He was in good voice, and it was good to see him. And look out for the new Bill Callahan record materializing very soon on Spunk Records from Inertia. Panda Bear was before that. I've been loving this new record of his called Person Pitch. It's out on Mistletoe locally. He is one member of that wild group, the Animal Collective, the kind of rhythm and drum man, and that's called Search for Delicious. Really great record, kind of sounds like... someone described it to me the other day as early Beach Boys kind of put through a whole bunch of reverb and playing in a room kind of distantly off somewhere else, which is sort of a good description. And the record does kind of seem to sound the same on first listen, but it's definite nuances there. It's really great. Bonnie Prince Billy with a lovely a cappella song called Careless Love, and we started off with the big noisy Arcade Fire, a song called No Cars Go from their new record, The Neon Bible. Will 2007 be the year that we get to see them here in Australia? Let's hope so. It's come to that time in the program, a little bit later than planned, but we call this segment Icebreakers, and my regular guest is Dave Hager. And what we like to do with this is kind of, it's just basically a little bit of a rant about local art, visual in its nature, and sometimes often centred on the internet, but... we have a special guest this evening, Carolyn Fraser, and she runs a studio called Idlewild Press. She was a little worried you might have had her confused with the Scottish rock band when I mentioned her about 15 minutes ago, but please don't be confused. She runs a small studio in the Nicholas Building concerned with the somewhat rare art of letterpressing. She was born in Melbourne, lost for some time in the American wilderness, and returned in 2005 to set up this studio. Carolyn, welcome to Icebreakers.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
It's lovely to have you here.
It is.
Now, I'm sure your rendition of the history of letterpress will be far more thorough than mine, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But we're talking here about an art form that began sometime in the 15th century, became the major dominant form of printing, and then at a certain point became totally superseded and in some senses kind of relegated to the scrap heap. So I guess it begs the question, how did you find yourself enamored with the art of letterpressing? And perhaps in answering that question, you can explain to the listeners exactly what it involves.
Well, letterpress is a relief technique, and so letters or images that are rendered in metal get pushed into paper. So it involves pressure, and it the result is a product that's very textured and has a tactile quality that you don't find in offset or now currently digital printing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things about letterpress is that, I mean, it is a common perception that it is a completely dead form of production, which isn't entirely true. There are small sort of pockets within the printing industry that are still use letterpress. So if you see raffle tickets that are sequentially numbered, oftentimes the numbering is done letterpress, because that's something that that's really the only technology that can do that, because the pressure of the press forces the number over, and that's what happens.
Yeah.
Also, die cutting, when things are cut out like pizza boxes, that's done on letterpress machines.
Oh, really?
without inking rollers, again because it's pressure that's going to cut something out.
Yeah, of course. So twice a week I come into contact with letterpress.
Yeah, you do.
When I eat pizza.
You
wow,
do. Although, yeah, I mean, die cutting is sort of a on the edges of what you would consider letterpress, but there is still sort of commercial uses of the technology, and there are still commercial shops that use letterpress.
Mm.
But one of the things that, of course, has happened, and this has happened a lot in art, is that, you know, once industry has no use for equipment, artists are able to sort of take that over. There was a period, I've heard, in the 70s where you could drive a U-Haul truck up to any print shop in town and they'd give you their letterpress equipment because there was
this big shift
to photo typesetting and other technologies that were taking over for offset. So letterpress is something that it was the first form of printing in the 15th century. Artist books are a form that letterpress is found in often now because that equipment has become available to artists. And I think it does have a very particular feel that a lot of artists like, and works well with other kinds of printmaking techniques and mm-hmm. technologies. My entry into it was a very roundabout one. I was making books and was writing and interested in making books, and always thought about writing in visual ways. And so I was really kind of searching for a way to make things. I was living in New York at the time, and there's a Center for Book Arts there that's a public access workshop that both teach people to print and to bind and various other book skills.
Mm-hmm.
Also, once you've taken classes there, you can go and use their equipment for your own projects. And so that's how I began. I was doing that for years, sort of on the side of what was really my kind of full-time thing, mm-hmm. until I realized at one point that, no, actually, this is what I'm doing with my time, and I should
pursue
it.
This is what
I
want to be doing.
Yeah, and this is what I am spending my time doing. So
yeah.
At that point, I got an apprenticeship with a fine press publisher that does limited edition books, which is the area that I work in now.
Yeah.
It's quite an interesting dichotomy to think, you know, it was the main, I guess, way of producing text and print and the like, and now it's obviously with the onslaught of digital, it's such a highly specialised thing.
Yeah.
It was hidden, but now, you know, in contrast, it's become a niche market, and you know, by that reason, it's now a very personal touch to it. And having a look through a couple of your artist books here, and even stationery that you've got, it is a very tactile and very personal thing. And what you were briefly saying to me before we were on air about there's a certain clientele, or there's a certain person that is drawn to that type of work because it is niche now. I guess we're so used to seeing you know, everything around us being digitally printed, and it becomes an instant trash item these days, whereas these become treasured gifts almost.
Well, I think that I don't think you can underestimate the power, really, of the sort of tactile aspect of it.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that one of the things that we're responding to with this kind of work is a physiological response, that I think the eye is drawn to things that show depth and light and shadow. And so it has, you know, on a micro level, really a sculptural quality to it. And I think that one of the things that's drawn me to this kind of work and to designing and making books is an interest in, a sort of historical interest in shape and page design. And there is a whole history of shapes and proportions that are considered to be pleasing to the human eye, and that are reflected in nature, and architecture is about that.
I was about to say architecture as well.
And you know, there's a lot of, there's a lot of theory and sort of scientific interest in those kinds of shapes, and I think that that's something that it's drawn me into sort of exploring that.
Yeah, I was about to say, you've in the two books that I've got in front of me here, which is a shame that not everyone can see them, you were expressing different formats, and it's still, a learning process for you in the way that you produce the images on the paper. One was using the emulsion of a Polaroid image, and the other one was a technique which you can better describe than I can.
Well, the second book that you're referring to is The Prince Adonis Photogravures, which is also by now a sort of defunct mode of printing photographs. It's a copper plate process. It's an intaglio process.
Sure.
And it's a way of, it's a using a dust grain aquatint, so it's a way of printing photographs that are basically continuous tone images. It's a very complicated process, but one that gives a kind of rich depth to photographic images that I don't think can be reproduced any other way. And again, that's a question of light and shadow, and it's also in the end too, it's about handwork and
absolutely the craft and the skill of the artist doing it.
Yeah,
I mean, they seemed like mezzotints almost, you know, from a distance until you get up close. That fine and that detailed and almost grainy, you know, but a soft and not highly contrast and contrasted.
There is a really beautiful addition feel to those books as well, and it comes from, I mean, a couple of the photos on the ones that aren't the Polaroid.